Our long national nightmare is over. A contract has been reached. Terry McLaurin and the Commanders can have a press conference. They can smile, they can hug, they can high five, and they can pretend like nothing ever happened and there was never any animosity.
In your face, everybody, I'm here. Ha! I didn't have to go on vacation or get strep throat or something crazy. I get to see it live and in charge. Thank goodness. I don't know, man. I'm gonna miss it going around in circles and talking about contract terms and holdouts and the CBA and more animosity between the two players and what day needs to start practicing in full. I'm gonna miss it. Not even a little bit. Thank you. Let's please concentrate on a football season that is rapidly approaching.
I'm looking at hotels in Santa Clara for February right now. Looks like the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in San Jose is only $126 a night. Anybody want to get down on this one? Get a couple of rooms, a little block with your buddy? Anybody looking up flights? A good offense just got a lot better. Jaden Daniels' supporting cast is coming into shape here as this photo starts to materialize. We're starting to develop this Polaroid. Wide receiver one, Terry McLaurin, is signed. Wide receiver two, Deebo Samuel, got to touch the football in the preseason. Had a whale of a camp. His only touch, as a matter of fact, in the three dress rehearsals, one of which Washington took moderately seriously. He had a 19-yard end around, looked fast.
And looked good.
Looked like old Deebo. Wide receiver three, I think Noah Brown's going to be ready. Did you see any of the video of him before the Saturday game?
That was encouraging.
He was running, he was cutting, he was sweating, he was sprinting. He looked like Noah Brown again, so I'm feeling good about where he's at with his health. You got tight end one, Zach Ertz, who we didn't see in the preseason, ready to go, locked and loaded. Austin Eckler in the running back group, led by Chris Rodriguez and Ja'Cory Krosky, Walter Payton, all lined up and ready to play football. So let's do this thing together. Let's have a season. Terry McLaurin is a Washington Commander for the next four seasons under contract. Now, here's what we got to figure out.
Sure.
What's that guaranteed money going to look like? Because as we've talked about the whole time, we talked through the lens of the AAV. The only number that really matters is guarantees and how far into the contract they go. That's what tells you what this new deal is about. But on the surface, like, this is now agent victory lap time. A lot of people yelling about Buddy Baker, not knowing what he was doing, screaming about how he was in over his head. Right now, he gets to leak the numbers to his reporters, like Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports, $32 million a year. When you count the first year already under contract for McLaurin, because it's three new seasons, basically comes down to right at $30 million a year, which is where a lot of us thought this could end. But the real question is going to be, did he do better than the DK Metcalf guaranteed number 2 years older? Because if he did, Buddy Baker needs to rent out an auditorium somewhere, fill it up with people, and walk out and take a bow when those curtains open.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, the real terms, the real numbers, that'll come at some point. I'm far less concerned about that. People sort of, you know, I think kind of had a different view of my actual opinion. I don't want money out of people's pockets. I don't care if, oh, this guy got 17 guaranteed, this guy got 21. When I go, hey, Javon Kinlaw, that contract's too big. Not because I don't want Javon Kinlaw to be financially successful. It's because the salary cap space allocated to Javon Kinlaw in future parts of the deal, I scratch my head. That means you may not be able to give Quan Martin as much money as I'd like, and you have to find the new safety. You may not be able to give Mikey Sanders still a nice extension. You maybe have to draft another corner, or when Laremy Tunsil wants to be paid, or Frankie Louvo wants to be paid, or anybody next. So I care about that salary cap hit. I care about the cap hit first, second, third, all the way down to 217th. Then I care about off-ramps. If and when it gets bad, as we've seen with contracts a million times, when John Allen's contract wasn't up, but they could get out of it with very little financial concern. And that kind of became a governing principle as this team was building their roster over the last calendar year plus. You'd go, you know what probably makes some sense is they move on from Jonathan Allen without much cap hit and they'll end up replacing
him. That's actually a really good tangible example to make the point of John Allen was under contract for a lot of money this football season.
Yeah.
But zero of that contract was guaranteed. So what Washington did is they quite literally just lopped that year of the deal off with no guarantees, and they didn't have to pay him anything, and he hit free agency. And so when you could sign Terry McLaurin for 10 years and $300 million like some baseball contract with the New York Yankees. If you want to give him the San Diego Padres Manny Machado 10-year $300 million deal where he makes $30 million per, I mean, Buddy Baker could do that, and he could put that out there, and everyone could go crazy. The question is, how much is guaranteed? Because if $60 million is guaranteed, then it's really just 2 years at $60 million, $30 million per. And that's what we're trying to figure out. Now, I don't know how many people care about that, to your point. I don't get the sense that most fans do. I don't think I'm in the small minority, but I'm probably in the minority to say, I just watched a stare down. I just watched two guys square off like fighters with Dana White in the middle before a big fight. I'm kind of curious to see how it goes. Mm-hmm. They played chicken for a bunch of months. If you don't care who won and you just walk away now because they're not playing chicken anymore, God bless you. I'd like to know who flinched. So I'm going to want to know, not just because I want to know, did Terry and the agent win? Did the team cave? Did he have more leverage than we thought? Or did the team never budge at all? If he got 40, 45 million in guarantees or something, and the numbers released just look very friendly for the player and the agent, then Adam Peters played this thing beautifully and never caved, and they came to him. That matters too. But it also is relevant from a football perspective. What kind of shape are they in for an extension in a couple of years for guys like Tunsil, who's due up next year, and Luvu's due up, or when Jaden Daniels start being paid? So there are reasons to care about this, but I do think, for the most part, if you're a fan of this team, is he under contract? Yes. I don't need to know anything else. What time's the game, and is he in uniform? Those are the things you care about, and he will be in uniform in week one against the Giants, and for that reason, we're celebrating.
100%. To me, this is more longer term than it is the early part of the season. And what I mean by that is, you heard Kadri Ismail on with the Junkies, Dan Orlovsky, audio that we'll play later on in the program, have basically come out and said the exact same thing, where it's probably too soon to have him out there for a full allotment of snaps. Probably too soon to rely on him as wide receiver one. Not enough time with him ramping up fully into to fully be Terry McLaurin, which is why I was beating the drum starting really a week or more ago. I understand you're looking for a contract. I hope you get it. There's also this football season, though, where now you've removed the ability to be Terry McLaurin from yourself by not practicing with the football team. I understand what you're doing, and I get it. But so now this is, the team needs to be judicious. Again, that's what Orlovsky was talking about, to make sure that he's himself. And you may not see Terry McLaurin for 75 snaps on offense in week one. You may not see him 4 days later in week two against Green Bay. It may have to be kind of an easing in, but this is about the next 3 years after this one, more so than it is about week one through three.
So he's going to play against the Giants. Mm-hmm. Had he not have been back today, that would have been in serious doubt. And in fact, today was my date, if you remember, that I circled on the calendar.
Yes, indeed, that's right.
For zero Dark Paulson. In fact, a couple of people hit me up this weekend and said, can't wait to hear your rant on Monday with like videos of Terry McLaurin seemingly sulking on the sideline during the preseason game. He had terrible body language. I'm not a body language guy. You guys are. But it was just kind of sitting there. Doesn't bother me, but people seem to be miffed by it. But they're like, here we go, Monday.
It looked like he was having a lot of fun,
It looked like they were getting that close to a deal. Although, yeah. Ask Adam Schefter, who breaks all the news all the time. An hour before this thing came out, he was on TV saying that they're nowhere near a deal, that there's no progress being made. He said that on television an hour before this thing broke. And then like 72 minutes later, he's got the tweet going, I'm hearing that the Commanders and Terry McLaurin have a new contract. So that either escalated very quickly out of nowhere, or maybe the team just was leaking absolutely nothing all along.
I'm very hungry because I haven't been fed a story.
Right, exactly. It's almost like he just puts out there exactly what he's told.
Copy, paste.
They haven't sent me the email yet with the terms. But anyway, this is a good day. This is a win. Now, I do think there's some meat that we need to chew on with this. Did he do any damage by not practicing all of camp? I know you think he did. How much damage? That's probably the better question. Because you can't tell me that by showing up on the 25th, doing nothing all offseason, he's going to be the exact same shape, the exact same guy on 9-7-2-5 against the Giants that he would have been with a full offseason. That's unreasonable. That's silly. If that was the case, then nobody would practice and nobody would have training camp and none of this exercise would matter. It'd all be futile. But is it noticeably different? Did he put himself at more risk of the soft tissue injury? That's what I worry about. Mm-hmm. A groin or a hammy or a this or a that. I mean, these are things we got to monitor now. And you know, if he pulls up in week one or week two or week three, there's going to be this huge I told you so from all the people that were angry that he wasn't there, right? If he just hits the ground sprinting, I think the first play of the game is going to go to Terry McLaurin to open the season. I mean, that would just be fitting in football and Cliff Kingsbury kind of doing a a who's who moment.
Mm-hmm.
But you throw him a screen or a little slant, or maybe you try to get him open down the field or something. That would
be a go ball. Yeah.
A blast of a way to start the season. Like, what if first and 10 from the 30-yard line, 70-yard touchdown to Terry McLaurin to open the season? Would just be iconic and legendary. But my guess is it's a pitch count in week one, 20, 25 snaps. It's a pitch count in week two on a short week with the Packers.
Around the same, probably, yeah.
20, 25 snaps. You ramp them up a little bit after that. But they've got to be very, very careful here.
Yeah.
For the people that just go, I told you, deadlines, get deals done. August 25th, he's here. This was all irrelevant. You guys worried about nothing. As if he's just going to go play 67 snaps in week one and go 7 for 127 and a touchdown. I'd slow your roll a little bit on your victory lap.
That's kind of my point. They need to be smart about it. Like, this isn't a video game where a guy that hasn't practiced football, and you've hammered this more than I have, and I think it's a smart point. Remember, they go tempo, right? They're not here to wait around for adjustments.
They ran the most no huddle plays in the NFL last year that any team has run since Chip Kelly was doing his Chip Kelly thing with the Eagles a bunch of years ago. The most,
yeah.
Their tempo was the fastest in the league. That wears you down. And as a receiver, you're running a lot of routes. Terry jokingly one time saying he was getting his cardio.
Got some cardio.
Right? Not getting any passes thrown his way. But with him, when you're running those deep routes, you just kind of peel it off and go right to the sideline when you're in shape. So, yeah, you've got to be careful with him.
Totally. And that's, you know, whether it was today or Sunday or last Tuesday, you still would have to be careful. I mean, again, we kind of crossed that point where you could have a normal beginning to the season. My big concern, you know, the minimum concern is, hey, he's not quite himself just yet because this is his training camp. It's like a pitcher that signs in mid-March, expecting him to go out and be the superstar that just signed right away is probably not fair. He needs spring training. He needs that ramp up. Same thing here. Now then you add in the worst case is that injury that comes from this, right? Where he's trying to compete. He's trying to, you know, go make a play for his team and he's not ready. It's not his fault. He's not ready exactly just because of the calendar and the ramp up, et cetera. But that would be now instead of just, hey, a couple weeks, you're not quite yourself and you're getting up to speed on a pitch count. Now it's not a couple weeks. Now it's a couple months with the quad, with the hamstring, with the groin, with the whatever. That's to me the thing that I worry about this year kind of derailing it.
Guest hotline right now. Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. That's where we find our buddy Albert Breer. And Albert, we were just singing your praises. Early on, you said it was worse than people thought. It certainly went longer than we anticipated. And then Friday, you had some good news we read on the air that maybe things were a little better than people thought they might be at that time. So let's just start with your reaction to the news today that they got something done and to these initial figures of 3 and 96 mil.
Yeah, I mean, I look, I think that these things can be difficult, like, at times. And I think this one was particularly tough for a couple of different reasons. I think for the team, you know, obviously they've got still relatively new people in there trying to establish precedents, trying to establish rules. And, you know, the reality is when you're negotiating a contract like this, everyone else in the locker room is paying attention, right? Including their agents. And so, like, you got that element of it and a very data-driven, new regime that's coming in and how they're going to handle players. And then, you know, on the other side of the table, you have a star player who has absolutely given you everything that you could possibly want from a player, from a professional, and who has ridden out some really tough times to get to where you are and where he is now. And so naturally he's going to look at it as I have invested so much in this franchise and, you know, rightfully so, he probably feels like he's owed something. Right. So that can be a difficult spot for both sides to be in. They were pretty far apart at the beginning. They made up a lot of ground more recently. And, you know, this just feels to me like one of those ones that just maybe needed a deadline, you know, and the deadline is the beginning of the season, and you're getting closer and closer, and now you're about to break camp, or you have broken camp, and you're coming close to the deadline, or to the cutdown day, and, you know, I think what you see, at least on paper now, I haven't, like, gotten a chance to dig into the the nitty-gritty of the contract, but this is a million short of where DK Metcalf was on APY, on average per year. But the flip side, it's 1 year less than DK Metcalf. So the Commanders have 1 year less of control, one fewer year of control than the Steelers do over Metcalf. So I think that's your compromise there. And I never sensed that Terry wanted to be anywhere else but in Washington. And on the flip side, I know like that Dan Quinn holds Terry McLaurin in the highest regard as somebody he could build his program around. So I think this is the conclusion we were bound to get to. And, you know, again, like maybe it's just one of those where it takes a deadline to push everybody into the middle.
Albert, when did this go from acrimonious? I mean, it was to a degree, how much I think only those parties that were in the room all the time would know.
Yeah.
When did it go from acrimonious to, hey, we might actually be able to get something done here?
Well, I mean, like there's acrimonious and then there's a different level of that, right? Like, and so acrimonious is like we vehemently disagree. I don't think this ever got to the point where it was like, I can't play there anymore or the team saying we can't have this around anymore. Like it was never at that point. Was there like natural acrimony over the pace of the negotiations over where the other side was? Yeah. I mean, but that's natural. I think that there was a pretty big disagreement on his value, you know, and what complicated things of course was his age. And then he's turning 30 in September. No player wants to hear that, but you know, there's a reality to it in the way that those things can factor into a player doing a new contract, you know? And so did they have like some really big disagreements on value? Yes, they did. Was this ever at a point where it's acrimonious to the degree where you're going to say, I can't play there anymore, or we can't have him on the team anymore? Not even close. You know, I always got the sense that Terry wanted to play in Washington. And I have no doubt that the Commanders weren't even considering a scenario where McLaurin wasn't on the team in 2025.
Albert Breer on Grant and Danny. So, Albert, most of the time we wouldn't care about this, but because of the divisiveness and this being Peter's first real big opportunity to do a stare down like this, we're fascinated to see who caved and what the numbers actually look like. Do you know anything about the guaranteed money or the actual value of the contract?
Yeah, I mean, I just have the raw numbers that are out there. There's a $30 million signing bonus, which is something that's nice to get up front. I also know that this is the biggest contract ever done for it might be non-quarterback, but at least receiver of Terry's age. So, you know, he gets that feather in his cap. The guarantees, of course, as you guys know, is where the rubber meets the road. And so I guess this is what they would call it, age 30 season, right? Like, so the key to me will be what's in his age 32 season. I think you can fairly assume that this year is guaranteed, that most, if not all, of next year is guaranteed. So to me, the most interesting number, and I think what you guys are going to want to dig into and see is what portion of his number for 2027 is guaranteed. Because it's, you know, obviously this year, like he's getting his money this year, right? Like that's not even a debate. So then the question becomes, did he get an extra year or did he get two extra years? I think that'll be the interesting one to look at.
So you mentioned the new regime coming in and sort of setting the tone. I mean, it's a fine line to walk because you need to be smart in terms of hoarding your salary cap space and, you know, being able to build the roster to help guys win, but you also want to take care of people. How did they do kind of this first go around in your mind? Again, it's a tough tightrope to walk.
Yeah. And I think like one of the keys to me was allowing Dan Quinn to be the football coach and Cliff Kingsbury to be the offensive coordinator and making sure that like those relationships were always where they needed to be. And I think that's important, you know, like, cause you know, in the end, sometimes there can be hard feelings that are left over from a negotiation like this. And so setting it up in a way where, you know, like the guys who are going to be hands-on with Terry when the season starts, those guys were in his corner. You know what I mean? Like and those guys, there wasn't really any sort of issue that they were going to have with Terry there. So I like that. You know, and I also think that, like, just as far as setting the tone for the negotiation, Showing discipline but not costing any games, I think, has to be a win. Now, would you rather have this done at the beginning of training camp? Absolutely. And is there some lessons that maybe the Commanders can take from this? Sure. But in the end, he's not going to miss any games. You would hope, I think everybody, whether you root for the Commanders or any of the other 31, like everybody who likes football is hoping that this doesn't go the way that CeeDee Lamb's season went last year, where the hamstring was a problem coming out of a lengthy holdout. But I think overall, the Commanders come out of this looking better than the Bengals do right now with Trey Hendrickson, better than the Cowboys do with Micah Parsons. And, for a team in its first go around in this sort of situation, it's, that's a good thing. And hey, here's the other thing too, guys. Like I've always felt this way, and I've said this to people from the very start of it. Like the one thing that the Commanders 100% had going for them there is there was never going to be a problem with paying Terry McLaurin. They were always going to be able, no matter what they gave him, whether it was 30, 35, 40, whatever it was, right? They were always going to be able at the end of this to point to Terry McLaurin and look everybody in the rest of the locker room in the eye and say, that's what we pay. That's the kind of person that we pay. That's the kind of pro that we pay. That's the kind of player that we pay. And that to me is like what protects the Commanders in this whole thing is like, no matter what you give him, he is a shining example of what they're going to reward. And, obviously that's a really good thing. And I know, guys like Dan Campbell and Cliff and everybody else there are pretty grateful that, in inheriting a situation that was broken in a lot of ways, they got a player like that they can point to in that way.
Albert Breer, check him out, SIMMQB, monitoring the entire league. Hey, real quick, what else are you working on? What are some of the big stories you got?
Well, we got a lot going on right now, Dan. Grant, you know that. So I have my 26th training camp stop today. So
you made it to how
me.
Many?
So
26?
I'm six short. I'm six short.
You were slacking. What happened?
Well, I'll tell you. I think 32 is impossible in this day and age. John Clayton, God rest his soul, used to find a way to pull off 32. I think that was back in the days of two-a-days, and he might have fibbed a little where he maybe like drove by one of the camps and just waved.
Quick selfie, yeah.
Does the 26, if you hit a joint practice, you can knock out two, right?
Right. And those can be tricky, though. Like those are like, and I think you guys have been to those. Those are kind of a cluster, So when I've gone to those, what I try to do is I try to go to the visiting team's hotel the night before. And that's actually what kind of created the situation for me last week when I was with the Commanders. I was going to do the Commanders Ravens joint practice and then they canceled it. Right. So I can't remember which team. I think maybe it was the Ravens that canceled it. I can't remember. But at any rate, then I was like, okay, what do I do? And I will tell you guys that driving from Owings Mills, Maryland to Ashburn, Virginia, I was 70 miles and it said an hour and a half on the Maps app. And I'm like, that's 70 miles. I can do that. And you know how you try to beat it. So I'm like, I could do that under an hour.
Good luck with that.
You can't do it in under an hour. Yeah, it's a lot of back roads. I drove by a cigarette outlet, which I hadn't seen one of those in probably 25 years. The sweetest corn in three states was one of the signs I drove by there. So it was, that was one of the more interesting days of the last month for me.
I hope you got some sweet corn in your travels.
It's very sweet.
Well, a lot of the farm stands out there are really cool. Actually, that was, you're driving over. I can't, is it 17? What's the 15? Whatever it was, you're driving over the Maryland, Virginia state line. It was kind of a cool little drive there. It's one of those things that you probably won't ever see again, if not for doing these sorts of things,
Well, we'll be tracking and reading everything.
Actually a covered bridge too, if you guys want to check that out. There's a covered bridge that I drove through across the state line.
Ooh, okay, I dig that.
Yeah. That's way out west there. Yeah.
No, the content's been awesome. The travel was well worth it because the stories and all of the insights been great. Keep it up, and thanks for a couple minutes.
No, thanks, Grant. I appreciate that. Have a good one, guys.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Well, there's Albert Breer, MMQB, NSI. With us on Grant and Danny. You can check out his work there. The terms came out on the Terry McLaurin contract. We had been waiting very, very patiently for these, and this is what we now know, Danny. Effectively, The 3-year, $96 million, which we knew was fluffed up a bit and wasn't exactly what this is going to end up being, is a fancy way of saying, when you really strip everything down, Terry McLaurin signed a 1-year extension, reworked this deal for this year, this season. So he's under contract in 25 already, and now he's got a different amount of money he's going to be paid this year. But then they added 1 year, 2026, next season, with guarantees. And after that, there is no guaranteed money. So here's the good news for the player and the agent, right? Terry McLaurin got a decent contract. $29 million APY, average per year, makes him top 10 in the National Football League. $44 million in guaranteed money, tied with Chris Godwin, top 10 in the National Football League. When you consider his age, he actually did pretty well. This is not much of a precedent for a guy at that position that's about to be 30 to get that kind of money. So good for Terry McLaurin. I'm thrilled for him. He's earned every single penny. I wanted him to be taken care of. He is the lieutenant commander. He's the guy that everybody has fallen in love with in this fan base over the years. Set that aside for a second. In terms of the game of chicken and the stare down, Brandon Sosna, who negotiated this deal for the Commanders, and the general manager Adam Peters, who's dug his heels in, completely crushed in this stare down. When you actually look at the numbers and you see that McLaurin has zero guaranteed money after 2026, it means if the team wants to get out of the contract after the 26 season, they can do that. They could only have to pay a $6 million penalty to cut him post June 1st going into 2027. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think
McLaurin. But they could.
Exactly. Terry McLaurin's probably going to go out. He's going to be good. He's going to be productive. And they're going to want to keep him around. And by the way, if he keeps performing, if he's catching 70-plus balls for 10-50 and 6-7 touchdowns, he'll be here year after year after year. But this is basically a 1-year contract extension tacked on to a raise this season for McLaurin. $44 million in guaranteed is an important number here. But instead of 4 years at $120 or so million, really what this is a 2-year deal for a little under $50 million for Terry McLaurin. And the team has the flexibility to move on if they want to after just 2 seasons. This is pretty amazing.
So it leads to a lot of questions. And you wonder, when could this have been signed? And for both parties, you know what I mean? Not blaming anybody in particular. Could this have been done 2 months ago? 3 months ago? Could this have been done, you know, at any point during the timeline where it seems pretty favorable to the team as far as I can read that, right? So was this just much ado about very little? Was it much, like, how much better did McLaurin and his agent do with this entire saga? I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe the guarantees came up several mil, and the APY went from what they were originally, we told, looking at around 25 mil, and it got to 29 mil.
Totally. And it was also one of them from the team's perspective. This is all it took. Why didn't you do this earlier? I mean, again, the questions are things that we'll probably never really have a feel for or know. But I will say, just again, with this data point, the number that the agent, Buddy Baker, gets to put up there is if you go to SpotTrack and you sort by average salary of AAV of receivers, there's Terry McLaurin right behind Garrett Wilson, right behind DK Metcalf, ahead of AJ Brown. That's what he gets to tout, and that's what was the 3 and 96. That's what that was all about. Any digging tells you that's fantasy land, that's fictional. It's not that. It's more kind of what you're talking about. The nuts and bolts of it, the team doesn't have to take a victory lap. They got the contract that they want. So
correct.
Their victory lap will be, we don't owe you diddly or squat, and we have a tiny dead cap hit if we feel like moving on.
By the way, they handled it beautifully. They got a good contract. Here's what I mean by this. They handled the post-agreement part of this beautifully. You let the agent throw out the big numbers. Everybody reacts and says, oh my gosh, the team caved. Terry got paid, you know, all of these things. And you don't have to say a word. You're allowed to just be classy and high road this thing. Quite literally, let the agent have his day. I reached out to somebody with the team at one point, and I'm like, hey, what's the guaranteed money? Like, what's the deal here? Just trying to figure out the actual side of this that the team would put out there. And they said, oh, we're just, you know, we're sitting back here. This, you know, talk to the agent, the player, like, this is their day kind of thing. Very classy. It's a nice way to do it. But the numbers come out because we got them, and it's very obvious here that it's basically a 2-year deal for Terry McLaurin at this point. Now, all that most fans care about, understandably, is that the extension is done, that he'll be on the field against the Giants, and that if he performs, there's a bunch of incentives in this over many years to come, that he can continue to force their hand to keep him on the roster and maybe rework another deal into his mid-30s if he really bucks the trend of wide receiver performance at his age. But from a strictly negotiation standpoint, Sosna, who handles it for the team, and Peters were clinical. Now, I still think there's a conversation to be had. There's a debate to be had over, did it have to be this way?
Should you have been?
Yeah. Should they have done it this way? Like, okay, you guys didn't necessarily take care of him in some loud way over many years. Could you have? Would it have been that different, right? But if the point is just figuring out the contract, which we now have, and then working back from that, they couldn't have gotten a more team-friendly contract with a player that means as much to them as a wide receiver one. Mm-hmm. And the last point I'll make is, I think 2027 is really significant here. Because there's no guaranteed money starting in 27, which would be the third football season from now, I think it tells you a lot about their plans with Jaden Daniels and the rest of the roster. If you look at their 2027 roster, Javon Kinlaw, under contract with some guaranteed money, and Sam Cosmi, who was also extended recently, under contract with some guaranteed money. Other than that, I think John Bates, final year of a $7 million per year deal. It's just rookie contracts. There's nobody that they're allocating cash to that far down the road. And by getting McLaurin's guarantees off the books by then as well, I think it tells you that that's when the Jaden extension's going to kick in. That first offseason, as soon as they're able to, you'll rip up the rest of Daniel's deal. You're not going to worry about the fifth-year extension, and you will do the Justin Herbert, Josh Allen thing, where the second you can, you give him, I mean, my God, at that point, $300 million or whatever that looks like.
Yeah, 75, 80 a year, something like that.
And that excites me, that they it seemingly are planning for having their books wide open in 2027 to immediately start the Daniels extension. Because we've been saying, well, if you pay McLaurin more money and you guarantee him more money and it goes into 27 or even 28 with a little bit of money, who cares that the Daniels money doesn't have to kick in then yet because you can go to the end of the five-year deal with the extension. But what if you tear the last couple of years of that up as soon as you're allowed to renegotiate after three and pay him then? That's good business. Ask Jerry Jones. The faster you do this, especially in the quarterback market, every time a guy gets paid, it resets and gets bigger and bigger and bigger, the better. And I think this was a window into what they're thinking.
Yeah, so you can increase that fourth year or that fifth year from what you normally would get and then maybe pay a little bit less as you go, just in terms of the total money, whatever. I mean, think about buying out arbitration years for young players, or aka what the Braves do. Every time they have a young prospect that comes up, they somehow sign him to like a 10-year deal for a third of market value just because you're getting the guy richer a little bit quicker in those early years. But yeah, I mean, as you look ahead, I mean, I think that discussion is a great sports discussion. Just going back to your first point about, should they have done this? Was this the right thing to do? For folks that, you know, you're rooting for the jersey, you're rooting for the team, long after this group of players is gone, 10 years from now, you'll be rooting for a totally new crop. You go, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense because you're going to have to, if Terry's 100% the commander tag, Luvu's like 84%, so you got to pay him a little bit more. You got to pay Sanders a little bit more. You probably have to pay Tunsil a premium because he plays at a premium spot. And if this guy, and then you don't want to set that precedent. The other side of that is, and this is a point you've made very well, I would say, over these several months and months and months and months that we've been doing this, is you don't have to break glass for anybody else. You do it for this guy because of what he's been through and what he means and you know how right he is. So who knows where the truth lies. And I think that's going to be fun for folks that want to have that conversation. But it is interesting and it is instructive to sort of see how they do this, right? Where Adam Peters mentioned this at his press conference. Hopefully we're doing a lot of these because what that means, not having prolonged negotiations that govern everybody's news cycle for 24/7 for 7 months, but it means you've got good players that you want to keep. That's the idea.
True.
And we've got their blueprint now.
I think for me, I have two takeaways. The first is, if you're Sosna who negotiated this thing or you're Peters who held firm, again, you could not have done anything more team friendly or favorable. And I think just strictly financially, they crushed it, right? But the second part is still relevant and is still an interesting talking point, which is I heard from one prominent NFL agent today who said both, essentially, the team pummeled the agent, to paraphrase, but then also, you know, and we know why. It's not like Buddy Baker was just incompetent. There was no leverage on the player side. There was tons of leverage on the team side. We had that all along. We get that. But the other thing that this agent said was, I think there's going to be a lot of agents and players around the league that look at this and wonder, Wow. If this is what Terry McLaurin got from them after the year he had last year, are they going to take care of anybody in a big, substantial way, or is it just going to be business and by the numbers? Because this is fairly business by the numbers math here. This is not a,
right,
Terry's our guy, we love him, so we're going to keep him around here forever. They gave him more money this year, $44 million guaranteed. He and his new wife are going to be just fine. They,
yep,
did very well at his age. But they did a deal to be able to get out of this thing in a couple of years. And if that's what they want to do and he's not performing, that's what they'll be able to do. And frankly, the fact that there's no guaranteed money after next football season is shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think wide receiver might look different. I'll be interested to see what happens in the quarterback room, if they truly want to keep Josh Johnson on the 53 or if he's a short holdover. I think keeping seven linebackers is interesting and certainly, you know, leaves some room for movement. You know, are they going to maybe add another D lineman somewhere in there? You know, certainly Cleveland Farrell getting cut is a guy who, you know, we've gotten used to seeing here in Washington, and Andre Jones was a draft pick last season. So a couple of names that, you know, folks might recognize a little bit, but.
That was Mitch Tischler of Monumental Sports. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. So let's go through the initial 53-player roster. This is going to look different probably by this time tomorrow, certainly over the next few days. They can now start shopping because everybody else is releasing dozens of players officially into the open market. And now Washington gets to pick and choose what they want to do with their last few roster spots. But for the moment, three quarterbacks. I always had Josh Johnson in. I know very little attention was paid to the fact. It seemed like that Marcus Mariota was dealing with an Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how different that would have been. But it seemed like everyone just wanted to cut Josh Johnson and either go get someone from outside the building or roll with two. I'm team two quarterbacks if two quarterbacks are healthy. But when Mariota's done nothing all preseason on the field and very little on the practice field, and the word Achilles is just being thrown out there and he's not being asked to do anything, sorry, you have to have another guy.
That's where I'm at. Yeah, I mean, that to me, it's not necessarily about Daniels. This was a Mariota question, right, where eventually he'll be fine. I don't know when that is, because, again, we haven't seen any sample that says he's good to go. And Josh Johnson, now, to me, in week one, unless something changes, unless Mariota's health improves and he's able to get some reps, he's the guy that's a play away probably in week one.
Running back, no surprise here. Four. Eckler, Kroski Merritt, Chris Rodriguez, Jeremy McNichols. Chalk. No surprise, as soon as Robinson got traded, I think we all knew this is what it was going to look like. You could have maybe said, okay, McNichols, just to save a roster spot somewhere else to the practice squad to start this thing, and we'll elevate him at the start of the year. But they like McNichols a lot. There was really no reason to get cute there.
I thought maybe a Hail Mary might be Kaz Allen for special teams, not necessarily to get work in with that group of four there. That was a long shot to me, but yeah, that's pretty much chalk, as you said.
You heard Mitch mention this. One of the big surprises, wide receiver. So more often than not in the league, you keep seven, not five. In fact, keeping six is kind of the normal number. Five receivers doesn't really work in this offense. I mean, here's what I mean by that. They ran more no huddle than anybody in the league last year. In fact, they ran more no huddle last year than any team since the Eagles when Chip Kelly was coaching them several seasons ago as the fastest recent offense in league history. Their tempo was number one in the National Football League last season. What does that mean? That means that your receivers running routes are going to get fatigued and tired, and they're going to curl off and get to the sideline, and other guys are going to have to run on. Logan was actually talking about this on the Take Command show we did last night, where his point was he didn't think there was a time last year where they didn't use like at least six receivers to get some kind of snaps. This just screams to me they didn't feel like anybody else needed to be on this thing. Like, if we really are just talking about earning it, honestly, Luke McCaffrey's on because he was a third-round pick last year pretty much. There was really four guys that truly earned it: McLaurin, Deebo Samuel, Noah Brown, Jalen Lane. And Noah and Terry didn't earn it by way of what they did in the last several weeks. Brown was hurt. McLaurin was holding out for a contract and then holding in just because of their track record.
Sure, previous deposits.
But McCaffrey's going to be in, so that's five. I've got a couple people, Instagram at Grant H. Paulson, DMing me and stuff, that are upset that Ja'Cory Brooks didn't make the team. He's going to be on the practice squad. I mean, no one's going to claim him. He's an undrafted free agent. If he would have had the entire camp like he had the first couple of days, or three preseason games like he had against the Patriots, maybe he would have been the sixth. But they feel better about some of the other veterans getting cut, and I totally understand that. I would bet on a sixth guy being added who will be ahead of McCaffrey, and we'll see, maybe ahead of Lane, depending on who it is, you know, on the depth chart when this thing's all said and done.
Yeah, there's going to be another Noah Brown, I think, at that position. Right, whether it's, you know, someone that gets cut or a small deal gets made, et cetera. I think they've made room for that player. Again, that is not a great a list of depth right there. I think there are three guys, really, that I'm – trust is the wrong word. Let me try to rephrase it. McLaurin, Samuel, and the upside of Jalen Lane is enticing. I like Noah Brown fine. How could you count on Noah Brown for 17 weeks, just given what we've seen here? And given what we, I mean, there's a reason he was available initially to Washington last year at this time. It's because of that track record of not being able to count on him week in and week out. And Luke McCaffrey hasn't shown a ton. I would anticipate another move is coming here sooner rather than later.
Now, if they kept a sixth, let me be clear, Obama style, Brooks was my guy. That would have been my choice over Osborne, Gallup, Moore, any of those veterans. Because you got to go young somewhere. Just once, please. Oldest team in the league. But they're going to go out and go the veteran route. No problem there. And if he's in the building, what's the difference? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he were to get claimed and you lose him, now we can have a conversation that you made a mistake. It just doesn't happen. Every team has the undrafted free agent that had a good camp that they like in their own building. Four tight ends. I thought this one was super easy and never really worth talking about. Ertz, Bates, Sinnott, Yankoff. Yankoff, people forget, was on the team for almost the entirety of last season and played a lot of special teams. No surprise there. I know you were really interested in tight end just based on not seeing a lot from Sinnott, but that doesn't change much in the way of, you know, who was going to be in or out.
Yeah, I didn't know if that meant something for Turner, who we found out, of course, subsequently was released, presumably a practice squad candidate there, but to see how that position would shake out.
Offensive line, they ended up keeping nine because Cosme went to PUP. So at tackle, they're five deep, which is interesting. Now, Trent Scott can play guard as well, and so can Wiley. So that's why you keep five tackles.
Right.
Because those two guys are going to have, you know, multi-position flex. But Tunsil, you're starting left tackle with Connolly. Presumably, you're starting right tackle. Does Josh Connolly start and play every down against the Giants, or does he rotate with Andrew Wiley? We got to figure that out, because that's going to determine whether Allegretti's a starter in week one or not at right guard. Because I would think if Connerly's at right tackle without a rotation, then Wiley would start over Allegretti at right guard. But regardless, Tunsil, Connerly, Wiley, Trent Scott, George Fent, who they brought in here, all of those guys make the team as tackles, with Scott and Wiley being guard eligible. On the interior, Tyler Biadasz at center, Brandon Coleman, the starting left guard, Allegretti may start at right guard in week one, and then survivor, Chris Paul. Year after year,
it feels
like he starts camp and you go, probably not this year. And then he has a good preseason, and he's back on the roster. Chris Paul still around as the last lineman in for Washington with Cosme to PUP, which means he will not play in the first four games.
So do you see Fant as maybe kind of that swing tackle role?
Definitely.
Yeah, like kind of the I'm blanking on the guy's name. Ty Ansekhe role, right? Where he was never the plan, but somehow ends up playing three games at left tackle, four games at right tackle, part of different packages, etc.
I mean, that's just a job. Like, that's like,
yeah, that's a thing.
You know, being a utility infielder. I mean, mm-hmm. Everybody's got a swing tackle. You got to be a starting caliber third tackle, basically. Fant's played a lot in the NFL. I just thought when they brought him in, you don't bring him in a week before cutdown day to then release a guy with his resume. So I kind of had him in Sharpie anyway, and you were kind of working around him. To the defensive side of the ball, they go with 90 linemen. You and I were wondering, would they keep 10? And they didn't. Defensive ends, well, let me clarify. If you count Von Miller on the D-line, for bookkeeping purposes, for the NFL, because of the number he's wearing, he actually has to be listed as a linebacker. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
Because he's not allowed, for whatever reason, to be a defensive end with his number. So, like, on all the stuff the team puts out, he's listed as a linebacker. But regardless, he's a D-end. We all know that. So it's Armstrong, Dietrich Wise, Von Miller, Jacob Martin, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Five defensive ends. Then four defensive tackles with Deron Payne, Javon Kinlaw, Johnny Newton, and Eddie Goldman. Most interesting thing here was that Goldman made it. I had him out. I thought he just kind of struggled in the preseason and didn't provide the size or the you know, frankly, the push against, you know, interior linemen in the running game that I was hoping for. Didn't anchor as well as I would have liked, but maybe that's coming, and maybe he's just kind of working his way into the fold here.
So I thought there'd be 10. I thought they were going to go with 10. It's just kind of given the system, scheme, design, et cetera, the idea of having bigger guys up front. Well, bigger guys tend to tire a little more quickly a lot of times than their smaller counterparts, right? And you have situational type players like I don't want Von Miller out there on first down. I don't think they do either. Now, 2-minute drill is a different story, but the idea that you would have a lot of Frankie Louvu downhill, Von Miller downhill, et cetera, that's fine. But Miller's not there on first and second, taking on, you know, pulling guards and getting double teamed by fullbacks and tight ends and tackles, et cetera. So there's only 4 interior defensive tackles. I thought they'd have 5, again, to kind of keep that rotation going. So that was interesting to me. I thought Goldman would make it despite, as you said, a lackluster preseason. So I thought maybe you'd have somebody else there who maybe could play both, et cetera.
Well, here's where the extra body goes is linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
When you keep 6 linebackers, there's your 10th defensive lineman.
Right.
So you're debating between maybe a Carl Davis or a Jalen Holmes or somebody like that, or Ale Kaho, who I'm thrilled made the roster. But Wagner and Louvu, your starting linebackers. McGee, next man up. Rookies, Kane Medrano and undrafted Kaho, both from UCLA. Ale started his college career at Alabama. And then Nick Belor, who's a special teams ace. It's really 5 linebackers with Belor, just almost exclusively teams. He's not going to play on the defensive side of the ball. Corners, no surprises. The only question was, were they actually going to trade Igbinoghene after the Rossini report today? They didn't. Lattimore, Amos, Sanra Still, Jonathan Jones, and Noah Igbinoghene. And then safety felt like one of the easiest positions to predict the entire camp. They're pretty deep there, actually. Quan Martin and Will Harris start. Jeremy Reeves and Percy Butler off the bench. Tyler Owens, bunch of special teams, maybe very minimally defense. And then your specialists, Way, Gay, and Ott. You got Tress, Matt Gay, and Tyler Ott. So there's your 53-man roster for Washington.
Again, the questions or the quote-unquote issues, and I don't know how deep you want to go on that, it's the back of the roster stuff. You know what I mean? It's the, like, who's their 6th receiver?
Isn't that always the case?
It's
normally not who's at the start of the roster.
Well, it's more so some years going, who the hell are they going to give the ball to? Who the hell is going to start here? It's now I'm like, who's the backup center among that group? Like, who do I feel most comfortable with? They're in a pretty good spot in terms of what they've done over last season plus.
New offense. Here's a handoff to Debo. The longtime 49er. Nice cutback and brought down at the 45.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you exclusively by the law firm Condori and Murat. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And welcome onto the show from the Your Washington Commanders. 29-year-old wide receiver from South Carolina. A pro bowler and an all-pro in his career, and one of the most anticipated offensive weapons they've added in years going into the season. Debo Samuel is with us on G&D. Debo, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing great, very buddy. Well. So, rearview mirror now, 7th training camp and preseason. You've gotten through it. Are you one of those guys now where you're just happy it's over and you can get to the stuff that matters, or do you still enjoy that part of it?
I still enjoy that part of it, but it's more, you know, I enjoy, you know, getting ready for these Sundays, and it's a thrill now, man.
What do you think your role is going to be? I mean, you carry the football, you're on reverses, you're going to throw some, I mean, catching passes. Like, how do you see your role?
I don't know, man. You guys, you know, got to wait till the 7th to see how this is going to work out, man.
Do you have a pretty good feel already, or does that start now in terms of
We got a pretty good feel. We got a pretty good feel for sure.
So how different is this offense then from what you were used to with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco? And did you have any relationship going back with Cliff Kingsbury at all?
Not too many. I just remember playing against him. You know, coming from a very lengthy, wordy playbook to, you know, one word telling a lot of guys what to do, a lot of different, like, signals and this, that, and third. And, like, it's like kind of hurry-up offense. So kind of like that's the difference.
How long does it take to get comfortable? I think it's a skill we kind of forget about as, you know, pudgy idiots in the media like us, but, like, it's a whole new language to your point. It's like, you know, what that thing meant doesn't mean anything in this new language that you got to learn. How long does it take to really feel comfortable and up to speed?
not going to lie, it just started slowing down probably like a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel and Grant and Danny here on The Fan. So going back to the trade, you obviously have a relationship with Adam Peters. I mean, was that one of those where, like, you wanted Washington or they just came to you and it lucked out that it was a good fit? How did that all come together?
So me and my agent got on a call after John Lynch and the guys granted me permission to seek a trade. We got on a call and he asked me what my top three was, and Washington was one of the top three. And, you know, me not even thinking at the time, just, you know, I was just in the motions of, like, naming, like, places where I wanted to go. Over here, they had a really, really good quarterback, just went to the NFC Championship. So, like, you know what I'm saying? They're building something special here. So I was like, why not? And then my agent and Adam Peters got to talking, and then we got it done.
But you obviously knew AP. I mean, did you guys have a good relationship, or were you just kind of like two guys in the same building?
Yeah. We had a great relationship for sure.
And so you mentioned Jaden. Our perception sitting in studio talking about this daily is that this has become a destination place to play because you've got an elite quarterback and, as you said, a team that won last year. Sounds like that was the case. I mean, was that the top priority for you? Why did they make that big three list for you?
Say it again.
Why were they one of the three? Is that a Jaden thing, or was there more to it than that?
You know, they had, just like I just said, they came off NFC Championship. You know, got a great quarterback, great team. Played against Cliff. He was the offensive coordinator over there and the head coach over there with the Cardinals. And, like, you know, I'm not too far from home. Some of my family live in Baltimore. So it's like, oh, that plays a role for sure.
Deebo Samuel with us here on Grant and Danny. So your 2021 season, Deebo, is one of the, just a juggernaut of a year. It was unbelievable. You were there. You probably remember it. 1,770 yards from scrimmage, 14 touchdowns, et cetera. How close to that do you feel right now this minute?
I feel real close. You know what I'm saying? I came back in, you know, the best shape I've been in. Just, you know, ready to rock. Brand new offensive system. So, like, came in ready to work and just show them that I was able to do a lot of things that, you know, they didn't really know that I can do by, you know, not playing against me as much. But, you know, came in ready to work, and we here. We're going to see how the season goes.
You're entering, what is it, I guess year seven now. How much better are you at certain elements of your game that you've kind of picked up and improved over the years than maybe rookie Deebo Samuel?
I think I'm about better than every aspect right now.
As it tends to happen as you learn the league and you work on your skills. What about the element of the game where you're just figuring out, too, what you got to do for your body and what that's like now and what you've got to do to get ready versus early in your career? How much has that changed?
Like, early in my career, you know, you're just a young kid and you're just like, you know, you can just go through the motions. But I had a future Hall of Famer right now. Wes Welker was my coach my first 3 years. And he was like, bro, you're not going to get it, like, how important offseason is for us taking care of your body and, you know, doing the little things that I don't know about. He's like, you're not going to get it till after your third year. And then, you know, that's when it started to pick up for me, taking care of my body and know what offseason looked like.
The voice of Deebo Samuel of the Commanders here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. With Terry McLaurin finally back now, I was thinking about you a lot these last several weeks because this was kind of a thing that happened all the time in San Fran, whether you went through it or Brandon Ayuk or Bosa or Trent Williams. And eventually, end of August, guys show up, they go play, and you guys win football games. Were you kind of chilling like, hey, I've seen this. This is going to be okay, guys. He's going to be back. Like, what was your mindset on this whole thing?
I knew it was going to get done. It was just a matter of time. You know, it's just how things go. I think, you know, both sides did a great job towards all that go, but not to get into all that. But I think both sides happy, and we just here and happy, Terry here and ready to work.
Was it a greater challenge not having not only Terry, but Noah Brown, who's coming back from injury as well, out there as you're trying to get your rhythm and timing and you know, working off each other? Is that tougher to build chemistry without those guys on the field?
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm in control of the things that we do. And I went out there every day and just tried my best to get better and better.
I know it's year one for you here with this group, and you haven't even really had everybody on the grass together until today. But what is your expectation for the offense? Maybe right away in week one, and how different might that look come, say, week 10 points. When you guys are clicking on all cylinders?
We're going to score a lot of points.
I like that a lot. At this point, what's your favorite thing to do on a football field? Obviously, score points, like score touchdowns. That became pretty clear in that answer. But are you? Is it like? Is it catching a pass? Is it throwing a block? Is it running between the tackles? What's your one seed?
It don't matter how it happened.
All right, Deebo. Thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you.
No problem.
Thanks, bud.
Deebo Samuel of the Commanders. on Grant and Danny. Pro bowler, all pro. Excited to see what he can do for this offense this year. Wow, an absolute blockbuster of a trade in the NFL. Unfortunately, Marcus Grant will not be coming on the show today. Fantasy expert, NFL Network. Hopefully we'll catch up with him soon enough. But this is a tear up the rundown moment as one of the biggest stars in the NFL just got traded. And it's the arch rival Dallas Cowboys moving on from a generational talent in his prime over a utterly bungled negotiation by an incompetent owner. Can you imagine?
Are there any documentaries about that guy?
Being a Dallas Cowboys fan, you might want to update your documentary, Netflix.
Yeah.
You might
include
want
to that.
Put this one. Put a little scene in there about when Jerry completely botched his negotiation with a player that should have had absolutely no chance of ever getting out of his building.
Should have been a Ring of Fame player, a Hall of Fame player. And he's gone. Are there any more? Do some more slow-mo shots of him walking, talking about Double J, idiot.
$188 million over 4 years. The new deal for Micah Parsons with the Green Bay Packers. That's $47 million per year. So the initial numbers, as we talked about with Terry, is always going to be kind of that huge, crazy agent put out number. But it includes $120 million fully guaranteed at signing. Terry McLaurin, as an example, just got $44 million guaranteed. Different worlds, right? But this is three times that almost. $120 million in full guarantees. The Packers were in a great cap spot. The Packers had a need for a stellar pass rusher, and they just landed a gigantic fish. Green Bay is going to need a bigger boat, people. Wow. So, a couple of things. First of all, in the division, this is awesome news for Washington,
yep,
for Philadelphia, and even for a bad New York Giants team. You don't have to deal with Micah Parsons. So to that I say, enjoy Lambeau.
Bye.
See you later. Hope you like the NFC North. Hope you like brats and cheese.
And by the way, take your time getting ready. We're going to see them in week two. Let's build this thing up. Slow play it a little bit.
You know, I got to say, I'll take one game when you've been there for like 9 hours over the two games every single year where he's a game wrecker. But yeah, Washington in what, like 2 weeks from tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Pretty much, right?
Yeah. Thursday Night Football week two. So 2 weeks from today, Micah Parsons in Green Bay against the Commanders. But this is an all-time ownership botch.
Wow.
The Cowboys are so terribly run at this point. They've become a joke. I wonder if their fans today talk themselves into this in some way where, you know, they are going, well, it's two first-round picks, and I'm sure it's more than that. We know of the two first.
That's all I've seen so far.
I'd be shocked if it's just two ones for Micah Parsons and that's it, especially because two ones from the Packers, that could be the 29th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, in the next 2 years, do we know if it's a 26 and a 27?
I haven't seen yet. I just see two first-rounders.
I mean, those are mid-20s picks probably. Where does Green Bay rank in the NFC right now after this trade in terms of chances to go all the way?
Pretty damn high, you'd think, right? Wouldn't you?
Does this make them the favorite in the North? Does this make them the closest team to Philadelphia on paper in the conference? Probably so.
Yeah, they're certainly going for it. I mean, there's no pretending now, because Green Bay doesn't break glass in case of emergency. They're like, free agency? Not us. We're drafting, and we'll draft tomorrow. We'll draft another. We'll keep drafting and maybe resign a couple of guys. What are you, 27? Get out of here. This is their first swing for the fences moment in how long? I mean, seriously, how long? How long? They haven't done anything like this because that's not who they are. It's not what they do. But to the frustration of people at times, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is going, please, please draft me a receiver. Like 6 years ago, he's begging them to add a little bit of help and something like that. And they're like, nah, we have a couple bruising running backs we want to make part of a tandem backfield and maybe a linebacker. They just don't do this. And they did it this year because they think they're pretty good.
Winners from this trade, the Packers and the NFC East, not named Dallas. The Commanders were winners in this trade.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Peters didn't have to leave his office today to feel good about the beer he'll sip on tonight. Toby, can you do another update where you announce that the Giants have traded Dexter Lawrence and Malik Nabers for me?
You won't do it.
Would you mind? Toby, you won't do the update where you say Saquon Barkley just got shipped to the Raiders with Ashton Jeanty? Let's just get rid of, let's Jeremy Maclin this thing, Danny. Mm. Let's get rid of all the players in the division.
Tobes, if you have a second, would you let me know that A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Lane Johnston are all gone, are all on the move?
Oh.
They're shipped out west to Arizona for some reason?
Let's go to Toby Altizer for the breaking news on the Eagles trading their entire offensive line to the Buffalo Bills. That kind of day?
I would love that.
Toby, do the update. Let me just see. This is a fake update.
This is fake!
But this would be what fake. It would sound like. Some poor bastard is about to get into their car right now, by the way, and be like, oh my God.
No, Parsons is the real one. For people who are just joining
us. We're playing with fire here, okay? Yeah. I understand. We're going to play the music, and Toby's going to use his update voice. I want an update, if you could work all these in. Barkley out of Philadelphia, Lawrence and Nabers out of New York. And let's say that the Eagles also have just put out a statement that Howie Roseman's retiring. Can we do all of that? Just a good day to be a Commanders fan.
Breaking news on the fan, not really breaking, but yes, breaking. Saquon Barkley has been traded from the Philadelphia Eagles to join Ashton Jeanty in a power duo in Vegas. And in turn, Howie Roseman has turned in his retirement papers. Dexter Lawrence and Malik Nabers have been traded as a duo to the Miami Dolphins for Tyreek Hill. Crazy news, but Tyreek Hill, who is injured with an oblique injury and may miss the year. Dexter Lawrence and Malik Nabers now out of the division.
Add real quick. Sorry, I know I'm not supposed to talk during the update. Add that they decided they're not going to play the season. The Commanders get the Lombardi Trophy. Throw that in there.
And
this
after,
just in. This just
this
in.
Just yeah, in fake.
Breaking news. Just confirm. Roger Goodell has said there's not going to be a 2025 season because it's a given that the Commanders are hoisting the Lombardi.
There it is.
There it is.
That's the update. That's every. Again, yeah, one person energy. Got in their car. Right. It was like, oh my God. So now, because we did play with fire there.
Okay.
This is a credible radio program.
Okay.
Let me be clear.
Bring it back.
Obama
bring it back
style.
In.
Here's what didn't happen.
Okay.
Any of that stuff about the Eagles and the Giants, you know, the teams that aren't stupid. Here's what did happen. Jerry Jones ruined the relationship so badly with Micah Parsons that the Cowboys have traded their generational pass rusher and the future multi-time likely defensive player of the year to the Green Bay Packers for what we're hearing right now is two first-round picks. For a team that is likely to be picking at the end of the first round for the next several seasons. By the way, they have the Packers have four players on their entire roster that are 29 or older. Four. Washington has 25 players. The Packers are legit. They need Jordan Love to make a leap. I've always been enamored with him and just fixated on the athleticism and the mobility and the arm strength. He is a quarterback you design in a laboratory, but so far it's a little bit Justin Herbert-ish, where like the tools and the traits have been better than the production. So he needs to make a leap if they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. But a good defense just got a lot better, Danny Hutier.